It's WSN's podcast, The Three Wise Men. I'm Danny Holbrook alongside Miles Holiday and Nate Garlock. It's January, gentlemen. It's cold outside, but the gyms are heating up.
I feel like I've heard that before, yeah. But
better the second time around. Danny.
Hey, look, he wrote it down right there.
I don't know why I come in here every Monday.
He misspelled it, but he wrote it down.
Speaking of misspelling things. Gentlemen, we're seeing some tremendous high school basketball games, and you know it only gets better from here.
Yeah, and got to give a lot of credit to the coaches in the area because they don't duck each other, right? They will schedule quality opponents, and you, as a basketball fan, as a basketball broadcaster, as a basketball junkie, it is so much fun because you get marquee matchups every single week.
Yeah, it's some of the non-conference games that we're seeing at this point of the season. Yeah. It's incredible. I mean, coaches have not built themselves any breaks.
No.
It's been incredible to see. We're going to cover a bunch of those games here in a little bit, and you know, when you look even beyond this upcoming week, there's some really good games on the schedule.
Let's get after it, gentlemen. The Diamond Dave Bowen, best thing we saw all week. Might as well start with you since you've got 14 of them.
Only have a couple this week. Randy Roberts and I were at Elida against OG. First time Elida's been able to beat OG in 7 tries. But the Elida defense was absolutely insane. Hands and feet absolutely everywhere on the floor. Made OG's life so difficult. Held them to 2 points in the second quarter. Can you ever imagine hearing an OG team getting held to 2 points in a quarter? Absolutely fantastic. It wasn't the fact that OG had a bad shooting night. No, Elida's defense was just lights out. They worked extremely hard. By the way, Parker Krim, I think he had 9 offensive rebounds again that night. They made an effort to get him the ball inside early, and it paid off. And then the second thing, I, as a Buckeye fan, I was awfully proud of this moment. After the game, that Elida Fieldhouse cleared out in 5 minutes because everybody was going to watch Ohio State and Texas. I mean, it was gone. Everybody out of there. They celebrated the win and got ready for the Buckeyes.
Well, they had to. Not the greatest cell service over in the Fieldhouse. So if you're trying to watch on your phone, you weren't getting through. So everybody had to get out of there and get onto it. You know, for me, I had a couple as well. The first thing, you know, I want, you know, let's give a little shout out. You know, this is officially officials of Appreciation Week for the OHSAA.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, a big week for them. We talk about it. The officials never get enough credit for what they do. We're, you know, whether you agree, disagree, like, dislike, whatever is going on, they're showing up. They're there. The only way these games are happening are with them. And, you know, it's a nice thing for the OHSA to do, to spend this week, you know, recognizing all the officials throughout the state. So we appreciate them. Just want to give them a quick shout out before we get going. For me, and it's kind of piggybacking off of you. You know, you talked about that Elida defense.
Yeah.
For me, it's that OG offense bouncing back the next night.
Right.
You know, they 24 points in a game. I don't know when, if ever, that's happened to an Ottawa-Glandorf team. And that can really set you on a downward spiral if you let
sure
it, right?
Can,
like,
yeah,
that can be a slide that you never come back from. But the very next night, they take on a Finley team, and that offense looked like whatever happened Friday night didn't exist. 66 points against Finley. They hit the ground running. They had 4 guys in double digits,
right,
3 guys with 3 threes. They looked night and day compared to the prior evening. So gotta love it when a team hits rock bottom but are able to bounce back immediately.
Yeah, Royce Ellerbrock was fantastic.
Absolutely.
For them that,
yep,
night. Rolls-Royce Ellerbrock.
Yep.
And I thought their defense, though, did a great job for them because it led to a lot of easy,
yep,
points.
Exactly. They turned the turnovers into points pretty consistently. They shot very well. They didn't let up through the entire game, and it was a nice bounce back game for them. And my other one is the sellouts that we're seeing in the gyms, fellas.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about these big games that we're having, and we are starting to see gyms sell out. And, you know, this last week there were 2 sellouts over in Delphus. Delphus St. John's Shawnee sold out. Amazing atmosphere. Great game. Delphus St. John's LCC also a sellout. It, you know, when you can start getting these matchups where these gyms are selling out, standing room only, the environments that are in there.
Pretty cool stuff.
It's awesome. Nothing beats it.
All right. Now, Danny, I do want to make sure people understand that you were on the announcing team for that last sellout. So was that part of the sellout? Like, people said,
Danny's going to be there.
Danny's going to be there.
Listen. Myself, Gilly, and Elvis Gerback were in the building.
That's right.
That only happens when he heads out east over to Waynesfield and USB territory.
Well, those are my people.
There's a bad joke somewhere there, right? Gilly, Danny, and Elvis.
Walk into it, yeah. Guys, and it's awards time, gentlemen. It's time to give another awards. Miles, we're going to let you take this segment here.
Yeah, another tough dude of the year your recipient, Matthew Quatman. Nate suggested you. We agreed. So we went with co-Tough Dudes of the Year. Last week, we had Scrap Iron Vinny Brinkman in from OG. He was a tough guy. You showed a tremendous toughness because the amount of adversity you went through all year long. I remember watching you in the playoff game against Columbus Grove, fighting through that ankle injury that was with you for most of the year. And the amount of toughness that you showed was outstanding. And that's why you're receiving that that award right there. Walk us through how tough it was, you know, working through an injury that really limited what you could do.
Well, I haven't really had injuries in my life, so like that was getting through that was the toughest part. But I mean, it's your senior year, like you've worked your whole life up into that point, and then we were getting up, we were winning games like week 3 through 5, and then at the end of the game against Fort Loramie, I'd twist my ankle, and like I knew it was different than just an ankle sprain, because usually an ankle sprain is just like a week off and then it starts to feel better. But it just like kept lingering, and it was almost in like the back of my heel. So we got it x-rayed like week 8. I missed a week, but and then I kept trying to play on it and it just wasn't getting better. And I got it x-rayed and they said I had an extra bone in my foot that like shouldn't be there. I don't know what it's called. It's like some term. But they said I could get it removed. And that would, like, take it away, all the pain away, but I would obviously be missing football and basketball. So I just kept trying to, like, heal it. And then I would say the first healthy week where I was feeling like 100% was going to be Columbus Grove in the playoffs. And the first play of that game, I twist my other left ankle.
I remember that.
Complete other ankle in the first play, so, yeah.
As a senior, though, fighting through that adversity, how important was it knowing that you're the role model as a senior for his football team that you kept fighting through that?
It was rough. I mean, like having to watch practice every day and like you could just tell some of the leadership wasn't there, and it's hard to do it from the sidelines really, and like you're in the trainer's room doing all this stuff and you're not really out there. And then the week against Jefferson when I sat out, that was hard to watch because I mean that's the first game I think I've sat out in my career, my high school career. I don't think I've ever missed a game, and it was just not fun to watch from the sidelines.
So Matthew, you get into late October and everybody is hurting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tough season, especially in the Northwest Conference.
Yeah.
The difference between injuries and being hurt. Talk about that a little
bit. My dad has made that very clear my whole time.
I'm his dad.
The injuries and being hurt is definitely a difference, and our coaches really like harp on that all year, that you're not hurt or you're not injured, you're hurt. Like, you could play through it. But when I talked to Paul D, he was like, yeah, dude, you're injured. Like, there's nothing you can really do about it. But, I mean, it was a grind every single week just trying to get closer and closer to 100%. And, I mean, it got there and then the other ankle went out. So,
You know, Matthew, anybody who knows you and knows how you play and knows your style knows that toughness is one of the things that like you like to define yourself on, you know, being that tough guy out there, being able to fight through things, whether, you know, it's injuries, you know, extra tackles, you know, you're not going to come down by the first hit or the second hit. You like those yards after contact. But having to have all of that all at once this year, right? Like, and fighting through that and knowing you, the little that I do, and obviously, you know, I got a little bit more insight on your season as this went through, but there was never a moment this year where if it was up to you, you weren't going to be in.
Yeah.
You continued to fight through all those things. You know, what was that like? I mean, that had to be frustrating knowing like every week, knowing what you're capable of doing, but having limitations, but getting yourself to a place mentally to fight through that.
Yeah. I would say I take a lot of pride in like the word tough, and like I don't really use it, but I like the word, how like people described it, like, and I'd feel the mental part was probably the worst part, because I mean it didn't get better till it took 5 weeks,
yeah,
till 6 weeks on an ankle sprain. Like, that's usually just not what happens. And I mean, every week you just had to keep doing the band stretches, stretching, icing every day after practice. And when game time came and I couldn't go, like I could barely run. I mean, it was just like, all right, move on next week. You know, who do we play next week? Am I going to be able to play in that one? So,
you know, and even when you were limited though, you still, and Coach Palti did a nice job, and you embraced those roles because you knew that even when you were out there, and you're not coming out and putting on social media or announcing, hey, I'm hurt. I'm not going to be able to do anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, people know that when you're out on the field, you take a lot of attention, you become a focal point. And so you had to kind of embrace a new role. And Coach Pulte did a nice job of doing that as well, but you found other ways to affect the game. Did you find that? I mean, I know it's not as satisfying as having the ball in your hands and being able to affect it that way, but did you at least find a little bit of solace in the fact of knowing, hey, I can at least still come out here and try to help us win?
That was 100% like the point. Against Pandora week 10, he like told me, he was like, I can tell running back is very hard for you because like cutting in and out, carrying people. So he moved me to wide receiver mostly that week. And just like I had a pretty good game and like we won the game. It was a playoff game too. So, I mean, it felt good knowing I could still help the team. And I'm just like vocal leadership was probably the biggest part. And some weeks it was really hard because I just like it was hard because I was hurt. I mean, it was not as fun as it seems. But yeah, just ever getting better every week.
So tough guys admire other tough guys, right? And we look up to other tough guys. Some players, when you're a young player, maybe at LCC or college players or NFL players, who are some of those tough guys that you always looked up to?
Well, right now it's Cam Scataboo.
Oh, yeah. Mean future Pittsburgh Steeler. Yeah. Yes.
They're all calling me Cam Scat on the basketball team. They just
That's great.
He wears number 4 and he did running back and receiver. I mean, just like watching him, like you can tell, like he looked concussed the whole Arizona State.
He was.
He was still scoring every touchdown. So, I mean, yeah, I think Tough Dude of the Year is a pretty sweet award to win.
Do you look back on your 4 years at LCC and realize how important the weight room and nutrition and training was? I mean, even though you were hurt this year, could you imagine if you wouldn't have took this as serious as you did?
I feel like the biggest moment of that was like my freshman year going into sophomore year because I didn't know what position I was going to play. I was always just kind of the athlete guy, and I was like 150 pounds. I think I put on 40 to 30 pounds just to get ready. Wow. And it was just weight room, and I played 3 sports, so it was hard, but you got to lift, eat, and just getting prepared for the varsity level is like the biggest thing. But yeah, and then icing. I hate icing. And I was on it every day after practice trying to get that ankle healed. But, that's a big part.
Do you have a favorite play or memory that shows that you know how physical you are, your toughness, that you say, hey, look, if you want to see what being tough is all about, this is the one play for me?
I think sophomore year playoffs, Macomb, it was like wet and snowing. My feet were frozen. It was horrible. I was like, I was out there. But I think I broke like 4 tackles and scored. And it was a big moment in the game because they were coming. I think we were only up by 1 and we just got the ball back. And yeah, it was.
My favorite play for you this year was when your coaches told you not to read the pass against Kerry. Yeah. You stepped up and did it anyways and picked it off.
That's a pretty good one, too. Yeah.
My favorite one was the catch, non-catch, going out of bounds. Or, you know, the replays showed that you actually probably were in bounds on the catch.
Oh, Shawnee.
Yeah, Shawnee. Yeah.
There was a TikTok that showed that. I didn't even know I was in bounds.
It was
honest.
A great catch. It really was.
That's Nate's way of reminding you.
It's the one thing I got, you know, that's the one thing.
Well, Matthew, what are the plans after high school? I know, you know, you're the tough man. Are you gonna play college football?
Yeah.
You wanna continue this?
I mean,
you wanna continue abusing your body?
For sure. But I'm going up to ODU on Thursday.
Nice.
And I'm really liking the coaches there, and I'm gonna go check it out.
Quarterback from there.
Yeah.
I know him. Yeah.
I got a lot of buddies up there, and they all love it too. And playing with Carson, I mean, it would be a dream come true. We've been playing football since 2nd grade in the backyard and LCC. So
what's the recruitment process been like for you? I know it's not always it's different now, obviously, with all the NIL stuff, and it's kind of a trickle down. Everybody thinks when you talk about NIL, right, everybody thinks it's just high level Division I, but there's this trickle down now.
Yeah.
You know, where it affects, you know, low level D1, D2, D3, NIA. What's this been like for you going through that process?
I talked to a lot of D3s. And I kind of have my mindset on D2 because I know, like, my statue, like, 5'10", 190 isn't really what D1s are looking for. And so I talked to Ashland, Tiffin, and ODU coming in this year and a bunch of D3s. And really, Ashland came in to watch because they got the Trevor Whitney. Where he committed there, and their coaches told me they were going to be there, and that was, like, my prime of being hurt. So I was like trying my best to get ready, and I was like, I'm ready to go. Like, this is my chance. And then I barely could play that game.
Right.
So that was rough. But I went to Tiffin's camp and talked to them. But I really like ODU, and I'm going up there Thursday.
Well, had we known this, we would have put a chain on that plaque. Then you go into these schools, you just have that plaque. How could they not give you a scholarship? Right?
I mean, everybody wants the tough dude coming through.
Right there.
Yeah. Well, Danny, we can't let him go until, I mean, it's going to be pretty much the official end of our interviews for football, right?
Yeah.
You can't end this without doing the thing that you managed to do all year long that's been so exciting for us over here.
All right, Matthew. You want to beat one school every year. Who's the school that you want to beat the most? I ask every player on the panel that comes in here.
Trying to remember.
And everybody's watching.
Yeah.
I think I said it would probably be St. John's. Because not being in a conference and then you play the same schools and it's the Holy War. But I would say St. John's.
Okay. I thought you said Grove or Bluffton or something.
Well, I probably would if I was in the NWC the whole 4 years.
Yeah, you only got the 1 year conference play.
Coming into this year, it was definitely Grove. But
that's awesome. Well, Matthew, congratulations. You are our tough guy. You and Vinny are the two tough guys.
That's right.
And,
they really are.
So congratulations. And what a treat it's been for us to watch you the last 4 years. And look, you can count on us being in the stands some night here at ODU or wherever you choose to play football. We'd love to watch you play.
So. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Now, Matthew, you're very fortunate because next year if we have a co, we're going to have him in studio and we're going to have an Oklahoma drill. Who it is. So you and Vinny, you guys are co for last time only.
When I walk in that gym, it takes me back to when I was a little kid. It really does. And the old school feel and the sellout yesterday, and it was about 9,000 degrees in there.
Yes.
And basketball was so good. And it just makes me feel good about high school basketball. And you said it, with the sellouts, and people are starting to come back into the gyms. And, hey, look, COVID was 5 years ago, but we've been working back to that. And people are coming out, and people are supporting that high school athletics, and it's the best, and that game yesterday was fantastic, and we get to do it, and we get to do it for a living, guys, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's great, and it just speaks to the caliber of the talent that we have around here. You're not selling out games if teams aren't high quality, if the players aren't great at what they do.
Yeah.
We're selling out these games because we have teams that are some of the best in the state, and we couldn't be more lucky if you're a fan of basketball in this area.
Yeah, and you guys know earlier in the year we were predicting who was going to win the divisions, and I said Rushi was my team.
He did. I remember that. He said, Rushi is a lock.
He said,
Rushi's
I guarantee it. Yeah. You can take it to the bank. I stake my reputation
on
it.
DSJ who? Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know, we film everything, right? So I did not guarantee a thing.
I don't think we're filming.
No, audio. You said it once we got off air. You pulled us aside and said, listen, everything I just said, it's Rushi for sure. And we both were shocked.
I never guaranteed it, but I'm just going to say this. I watched Delphi St. John's. I've had Delphi St. John's a few times. I've got him Friday night with Marion Local. I don't know about Rushi anymore, guys. This Delphi St. John's team is on another level.
I was just having a conversation with somebody earlier today about that exact thing.
Yeah.
And regardless of whenever Rushi and Delphi St. John's meet, that's the de facto state title game.
It's a great point. Yeah. And how about an advantage for DSJ? I mean, every time you go into a game, you're up 30 to nothing on your opponent.
Yeah.
Because Cam's going to score at least 30.
Yeah. It's time to preview WSN's high school basketball games this week, and we've got some dandy boys and girls. Let's start with Girls Night Out Thursday, Crestview at Allen East. Dave Bowen, Darren Gilbert. Crestview comes into this one 11-3. Allen East comes in 11-1. Really having a great season.
Yeah, it might be the tallest broadcasting duo in WSN history right there between Dave Bowen and Gilly, right? Hopefully they don't scare people and they walk in there. But, Danny, this is a marquee matchup. But, Nate, when I look at this one, I think rebounding is going to be the big difference. Kreider and McCoy, just those two alone, get 17 rebounds a game for Crestview. Allen East, their top rebounder, is their top scorer, Rylan Jones, who's only about 5'5", right?
She gets six
rebounds. So that might be a tough ask for Allen East.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is probably, you're right. I mean, it's going to be what's going to come down to whether or not, Alanis is able to create second opportunities on offense, on offensive rebounds, and if they're able to limit Crestview to one-and-done opportunities, it's going to be a tall ask for them, no pun intended. But Rylan Jones is a really good scorer.
She's amazing.
I don't think that the size that she's going to have to go through is going to matter too much. She doesn't really get too afraid when she starts going into the paint. She knows how to work around that. This is a great matchup. Alanis needs this test, right? They've kind of taken that next step, and you know, right now, Crestview is – over the last few years, Columbus Grove, obviously, those are like been the standards for the NWC. If Alanis wants to take this step that they look like they're ready to take, it's going to have to be a game that they win against Crestview this
week. Agreed.
Let's go to the boys' side. And Friday night, St. Mary's travels to Ottawa Glandorf. Randy Roberts and our own Miles Holiday. St. Mary's comes in at 4-7. Ottawa Glandorf 3-8. Gentlemen, I had St. Mary's last weekend in a rivalry game with Wapakoneta. They won a big game in overtime. They did a great job. They didn't score a lot of points. And, you know, Austin Scott and I talked about first team to 30. But you know what? Both teams played really hard. And good for St. Mary's, they didn't quit.
Richardson play in that game?
He did play in that game. He has been hurt, or he has been sick, healthy. Wise, I don't know what is going on with him. I've heard some things, but obviously I don't want to speculate. But I talked to some insiders in the program and said he has had some health problems.
Yeah, much different team without a healthy Richardson.
Yeah. Caleb Moyer had 18 the other night. Really a good job for Wapakoneta, but they're down without Richardson.
Yeah, and you said first to 30, you guys said? It might be first to 40 in this game, right? Both teams really struggle to score the basketball. However, St. Mary's winners of two of their last three. I did like OG against Finley, Nate. I've said all year long it's a young team that is going to play good basketball, and they better get a win on Friday night because they have senior on Saturday. That's going to be a tough ask for. I like OG because Fortman and Ellerbrock, I just think they're starting to play good basketball.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're talking about an Ottawa Glandorf team that is very well coached. Coach McLaughlin knows what he's doing. He, it's a rough year. They're waiting for some guys to start stepping up. And it doesn't have to be one guy that fills that role, right? You're not going to find another Colin White in that program. You're talking about a once-in-a-generational talent coming through there. So it's got to be one of those things where it's multiple guys going, hey, listen, we're going to do this together. We saw that against Finley on Saturday night, right? You had three, four guys step up, double-digit scores. That's the effort that they need. Let's spread this around. Let's do this together. It doesn't have to be one guy. I really like seeing that out of them. I'm really interested to see this matchup and see if they're able to kind of carry that momentum. It says a lot about a program when you can shake off a 24-point effort and you come back and you immediately put up over 60 points the next night. This is a game where I think that we're going to see whether or not Ottawa Glandorf has turned that corner.
Now, you did say there's no Colin White's in the program, but there is one guy Danny really likes, and I liked it, Parker Schumacher. He is going to be, by the time he's a senior, he's going to be that guy that can get 20 points a game.
Oh, he's going to be fantastic. Guys, game four is Friday night. Bluffton at Lima Central Catholic. Garrett Mansfield, Evan Skillett are on the call. Bluffton comes in 9-2. Lima Central Catholic comes in 6-6. Gentlemen, for me, the thing to watch in this game, we got to see how Lima Central Catholic bounces back from that loss to Delta St. John's. That was a rivalry loss, and they got beat pretty bad as far as physically, and you want to see how these kids are going to bounce back. I believe they're going to have a good week of practice. I think they're going to bounce back. They've got Bluffton at home. This could be a surprise.
Well, Nate, you're close to the program. You know a lot over there. I can just go by what I saw with my eyes against DSJ, the effort wasn't intense throughout the whole ball game. So if you're not giving great effort, how do you win basketball games, right? It looks like a program, looks like a team that's kind of looking for answers.
Well, and I think that you see that out of young programs, right? We've talked about this with this LCC team. They're relying on mainly freshmen and sophomores. They have the one senior, Matthew Quatman, who we just got done talking with. Other than that, that is a young, young program. And I think that you're going to see that out of them, right? Like, it's hard to, freshmen and sophomores are going to be freshmen and sophomores. It doesn't matter how talented you are.
Yeah.
And then when that's all you have, if they all kind of do it at the same time, it can be really ugly. They don't know what it's like to have that effort all the time, right? They don't know what grinding is when things start going the wrong direction, being able to kind of push through and stop that. They're just kind of used to, well, here it goes, it's sliding downhill, and then they just let it finish sliding. And I think that's what Coach Powell is trying to work on these guys with right now is, hey, we can stop that slide. We don't have to shut down and the game's over. We can come back in that. They have the talent to do it, but there's going to be a lot of growing pains. This is an LCC team that has lost three of their last four games.
Tough ones, too.
Yes,
tough.
And then they're not all been close. Tough. There's games that this program should have won that they ended up losing.
Normally do.
And though that can be – added frustration. And then when you go and play a team like St. John's, it's this big rivalry game. It's a sellout gym. And then it doesn't go your way and ends up being a blowout. All of these things lead to a lot of frustration. So LCC kind of going the wrong direction right now, looking to kind of turn that table. It's going to be tough against a Bluffton team, right? You got Merrick Donaldson over there in Bluffton, who is playing really good. Yeah. You know, this last weekend, 17 points against Crestview in a tough loss for them. They rebound the next night. They blow out Cary. He has 15-9 in the first quarter to set the tone. This is a really good Bluffton team. And this is a game, though. You got an LCC team that's 1-2 in the Northwest Conference. If they want any chance of trying to stay in this conversation and maybe win
good
a
point,
they have to win this game. Yeah. Bluffton already with one conference loss as well, with that loss to Crestview, they really can't afford to lose this one either. So this is a really big matchup for both teams.
I really like Blake Summers inside at 6'5". LCC, I'm not sure they really know what to do with post defense. You know, they love to be a perimeter team. They love to attack. So I think Blake Summers could do a great job inside for this Bluffton team. And let's not forget, we could be talking about this Bluffton team being undefeated. Two losses, really close, 55-53 to Arlington and 70-64 against Crestview, or else we'd be talking about how great Bluffton is against everybody. I'd like Bluffton here in this one.
Okay. Game 5 Friday, the WBL Showdown, Elida at Bath, Nate Garlock and Jack McGuire. Elida comes in at 8-5, Bath comes in at 6-5. Both of these teams are playing good basketball right now. This is a really good matchup. Yeah. It is a big rivalry, too.
Yeah, well, this is a very different matchup than we saw to begin the season in the tip-off classic.
Yeah.
These are not the same teams that
matched up in
that game. And surprisingly enough, you're talking about two programs that are only one game behind Defiance, which is another shock in the Western Buckeye League, and Shawnee are sitting undefeated at the top of the conference. So both of these teams very much in this conference picture, title picture right now, don't want to have to lose another one. Elida is playing very good basketball. They are sneaky good right now. You're talking about an Elida team. When you look at their record, right, they're 8-5 overall. They started the season 1-4 in one of the most brutal beginnings of a season that I think anybody could have asked for, especially when you're talking about a brand new coach coming in, right? Since then, they are 7-1. Their only loss coming to a very good Coldwater team.
And it was a close one.
They have a good guard play. They have, obviously, we know what Parker Krim can do on the inside. Amari Washdory Island, very good on the outside. You know, the one thing that they really have to work on, I'd like to start seeing getting better out of them, right, is that half-court offense of theirs. Transition-wise, they are one of the best in the area.
They
play really, really well. For Bath, on the other side, they're really getting things done. They got a core three, right? That Jackson Foster, Zach Welsh, Logan Markley are playing really good. This team really turned a corner when Zach Welsh took over the ball handling. He became the point guard on that team once he kind of got his legs underneath him from that football run. They've been a different team. I'm really excited to watch this game and to see how this one plays out compared to their first matchup at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, two guys, really. When you talk about Coach of the Year candidates, you got to consider Dre White and Ryan Howard, don't you? I mean, who's done better jobs?
Bath had two wins last year.
Yeah. Bath had two wins last year, and this Elida team, you know, you talk about teams that believe they can win the WBL. You talk to those kids at Elida, and they will look at you in the eye and say, yeah, we can still win the WBL.
Absolutely.
They got great guard play, and they got good post defense.
Absolutely. Yeah. The thing that I really liked about their win against OG, not only just the great defense that they showed, Zory Island, foul trouble. And they navigated that around it and still got the win. Zory Island didn't play a whole lot in that second half because of foul trouble. Now, who's going to be that guy that kind of steps forward in this game? Brody Altenbach, 15 points against Bryan. That was kind of, wow, that shocked you, right? He's a guy that loves to shoot the three. If he can step forward again in this one, it's going to be huge. Foster Markley, going to get your points. Welch, maybe, but Everett Bensman, 9 points against Spencerville.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could be the second-tier player that really makes a big difference in this one.
Game 6 Friday night, guys. Surprise, surprise, a big win in the MAC. Marion Local travels to Devil St. John's. Myself and Dave Bowen will be on the call. Both these teams are undefeated. Look, we talked about sellout gyms. I can promise you this will be a sellout.
Without a doubt.
The good folks from Marion Local and Delphi St. John's will be lined up about 4 o'clock, so get there early. This one's got me excited. You've got the inside game of Austin Niekamp, who's really talented. You've, look, the Elwers over at Delphi St. John's. This is a great matchup. To
me, this game is a toss-up. I like St. John's only because it's at their place.
The spacing offensively for DSJ is always amazing, isn't it? I mean, they're going to get themselves a three, or they're going to get a dribble drive and a kick or a made layup.
And you can't slough off of them. You can't.
You cannot, because they will bury it, especially at home. They shoot so much better at home, and you should, right? Your home rims are very forgiving. Now, Danny, I had them against Shawnee, and I was convinced they will not be able to stop Shawnee all game long because of the size. But the biggest undervalued thing about DSJ is the team defense that they play. They play such great help defense no matter how big you are. So when I look at this, I said, Austin Kneecap, well, you get 29 points last week in a game. He's going to dominate. But then I remember, this DSJ team, they play such great defense. I think that is the determining factor. What about you, Nate?
You know, this is a tough one because, one, it's unfair that Marion Local is this good right in basketball, too. Like, this is, like, you can't, like, it's unfair. Like, it has nothing to do with this game, but it's just unfair. Like, you're paying, what was it? It was like 20 some odd games or 11. I don't know. It was ridiculous number of games that they were playing in a small window. And you're like, growing pains, they'll lose some. And we all suspected that Marion Local would find their footing, and we suspected them to be a good basketball team in February. They were like, no, it's cool. We'll be good in December and January, too. No problem. It's fine.
We'll be fine.
You know, you're talking about a Marion Local team, right? You talked about Austin Kneecap, Grant Kramer, 19 points a game, 13 points a game, respectively. Cam Elwer, Andrew Elwer, 30 points a game out of Cam, 15 points against Andrew Elwer. Those are those top two guys. The thing that Marion Local does significantly better than Delphi St. John's is rebounding. But as you mentioned, St. John's found a way to neutralize that against Shawnee.
I sure did.
So it's tough. Marion Local has the second best defense in the MAC. They're going to need it against a St. John's team that's averaging over 70 points a game. These are the top two scoring offenses in the league. These are the top two teams as far as scoring margin. They're first and third in field goal percentage. This is going to be a fast-paced, up and down, lots of shots up in the air type of game. And I think ultimately what it's going to come down to is who can get stops, right? Someone's going to have to be able to find a way to stop them. The team that can figure out how to run Cam Elwer off the three-point line will be the team that finally has a better chance of beating Delphi St. John's. Cam Elwer has made over 43-pointers this season already.
Like the last 3 years, no one's been able to do that.
Right. No. But that's your task, right? Like, and you've seen teams throw a lot of different strategies out. It's, well, we'll let Cam shoot and we'll make, you know, we'll just guard somebody.
Box and one.
They figure out how to beat that. Coach Elwer is doing such a good job of coaching this team around the things that other teams are throwing at them. But I still think the key is going to be finding a way to slow down Cam Elwer from beyond a three-point line.
I don't think you can, right?
You got to figure it out, though. I mean, if you're Marion Local and you've seen we think that we can have the advantage in rebounding, but we know that they'll maybe neutralize that. You got to get them one and done on possessions. The problem with one and done possessions with St. John's is if Cam Elwer has the ball, usually it's one and in anyway.
Well, even if you run him off the line, he finishes through contact on dribble drive.
You're not wrong.
If you send him to the line, he makes 96% of his free throws. I mean, he's an unbelievable player. And Nate brought up a good point, Danny. He said he thinks it's going to be an up-and-down game. Both teams going to be running. Now, I've had DSJ. You've had DSJ. You've seen DSJ. I think that is in favor for DSJ because do you ever remember them getting tired?
No,
they're supremely conditioned.
Yeah, you look at they've got Coldwater Tuesday night, which is how much energy are they going to expand to try to win that game?
Yeah, because that's going to be
that
a tough one, too.
That is a big game. And the other thing that Delphi St. John's does so well is Cam Elwer is such a good player that when he does go to the rim like he does all the time, your defense has to slough up. What happens when he slough up? He just kicks it out to another Elwer.
Sees the floor so well.
Oh, by the way, my brother averages 16 a game.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, my freshman brother averages 9 a game. And I saw Drew Boggs yesterday in the Holy War. I saw him take a ball.
You sure it's Drew and not Wade Boggs?
Diamond Dave. Drew Boggs comes off of a screen, goes between his legs, and puts a jumper up. And I'm like, he's really talented. Mm-hmm. They have so many guys that can get their own shots. It's going to be a tall task for Marion.
Well, this is a Delphi St. John's team. They're the only team in the MAC that shoots over 50% from the field. That's not just Cam Elwer. I mean, everybody as a team shooting over 50% from the field. They're the only team in the conference that's able to do that. This you're gonna you don't want to get into a shootout with them, right? You don't want to have to say we have to outscore them. But how do you slow this offense down when we saw Cam a couple week and a half, 2 weeks ago, have a pedestrian 19-point game, right? right? He only got like 19 points, and they still won like 20.
Awful.
There's still other guys on that team, which is, I think, the biggest difference in this Delphi St. John's team compared to last year. Last year, Cam had to get his points for Delphi St. John's to win. This year, they're proving that they can win even on those off games where he's not putting in 25 or 30.
Well, you mentioned earlier that it is official appreciation week, right?
Yeah.
So if you're the visiting team there, I mean, you're going over to the officials. Oh, hey, how you doing?
What's going on? You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because you can try that, but they also lead the league in free throw percentage where they shoot 83% as a team. So that ain't going to work either.
I get tired of people saying, well, Delphi St. John's gets all the calls because they go to the rim. They go to the rim with that reckless abandon.
Yeah. Yep.
Guys, Saturday, a big girls game. Surprise, surprise. Ottawa Glendorf is in a feature game this weekend. They play Ottaville at Ottawa Glendorf. Lynn Passat and Scott Magg on the call. 13-1 Ottaville and 12-0 Ottawa Glendorf. Guys, we saw Ottawa Glendorf going to Fort Laramie last week and beat them by 10.
By 10.
I was so shocked on that score. Yeah. Not that I don't respect OG, but Fort Laramie's really good. And OG said, oh, not today.
Yeah, I that was when that score came through and you saw that final and Ottawa Glendorf won. Not just that they won, they also won by double digits. Mm-hmm. I think we simultaneously texted wow at the same time. It was unbelievable. Listen, at this point then, okay, it's Ottawa Glendorf. That win, any kind of concern or any doubt or anything that you had, it's gone. I have no concerns over what they're doing. I have no worries about what they're doing. Carson Erford just seems to be getting better. When you have somebody in who has played since day one, they stepped on the court as a freshman to now leading your team in Carson Erford, and then you surround her with so many other good players also have played a ton of varsity minutes. This team, I think, is finally going to be able to finish what they've been trying to get done the last few years.
Well, high praise when Carla Siegel says their pressure was just so good we could not get shots for our best players. So that was high praise. Great call by you, by Erford and Kimmett. Those two are – I don't know how you stop them. Now, Ottaville, 10 in a row, quality ball club. However – OG can put out, listen to this, at one point in time, they can go 5'11", 5'11", and 6'2", and they're all athletic. They're not just big people standing in the middle of the floor.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're Ottaville, how you beat that.
I don't either. Ottaville's having a great year. Nothing against them. I think that they're going to have a lot of success moving forward. Yep. But I just think at this point, this is one of those seasons for OG where everybody just kind of better get out of the way.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Saturday night, guys, game 8. Speaking of Ottawa Glendorf, the boys take center stage, and Ottawa Glendorf goes to Lima Senior. Randy Roberts, Miles Holiday on the call. A 3-8 Ottawa Glendorf team and an 8-1 Lima Senior team. Guys, this is a really, really big rivalry every year. Ottawa Glendorf, Lima Senior. It's just two contrasting styles, two different communities. I'm afraid this one might get out of hand because Lima Senior is really, and I'm taking another away from Ottawa Glendorf because they are young and they've got a lot of issues to deal with. But Lima Senior, you want to talk about guard play? You want to talk about putting pressure on you? You want to talk about attacking the rim? Yeah, this one could get.
I wrote down for OG my notes. Yikes!
And we love Tyson in the Titans. Right?
Yeah. I like that OG team, even though they've struggled this year. I think they're going to be okay. But this is just wave after wave of quick guys for Lima Senior, and it's going to be a tough ask. You know, beating Mansfield Senior, I thought was a heck of a win the other night. But this senior team, you know, Nate and I have seen them. Danny, you've seen them. The Bounce Brothers, Jaquel Cotton, he's a matchup nightmare. A guy that can step out and hit a three that's 6'7" is incredible. They got guys like Amari Addy that come off the bench that would be starting at other places. Mm-hmm. This is such a talented senior team.
Yeah, one of the best teams in the state. There is no doubt about that. You know, maybe you find a path for OG if it's at Ottawa Glendorf, right? Smaller floor, maybe able to contain the Spartans a little bit.
Senior plays terrible.
I'm just saying, like, maybe, but being at Lima Senior,
he's trying to talk himself into it.
I'm just saying, with it being at Lima Senior, I just don't see a way for Ottawa Glendorf to be able to play because Tyson is not going to change what he does. Ottawa Glendorf plays a style of defense that they has been their staple for years and years.
Yep.
I don't know how they're going to play man-up pressure on this Lima senior team and give themselves a chance to win this game. I don't see them being able to match up. I don't be able to see them being able to hold up with the speed. I see the pressure of Lima senior being too much. I still think that Ottawa Glendorf has a problem with as far as who's going to be the ball handler on that team.
Absolutely.
That's going to be tough things to overcome. Now, the one thing for Lima senior, right, they will be without Sean Foster for this game.
Okay.
But they're so talented, I don't know that it's really going to matter.
And he's suspended, right? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, well, he got the two technicals against Mansfield, so it's just the mandatory one.
Okay.
But, you know, it is what it is. But I don't think that that's really going to matter. I mean, obviously, Sean is incredibly talented.
Right, yeah.
And Sean is one of the best players in the entire state, highly recruited, very, very, very good basketball player. But they have so much talent on that team, even with him not being able to be on the floor. I really don't know that it's going to make much of a difference.
No, and remember, Elida, their quickness is AOG alive, right?
Yeah.
And so the quickness of senior, I mean, you have the litmus test already. You know what's going to happen here.
So, yeah. I mean, because if you're out of Glendorf, right, you got to take the air out of the basketball.
You got to slow it down.
And I don't know how they're going to be able to do that with the pressure Lima Senior is going
to
throw
the
them
basketball.
At
them.
I just don't know how you're going
to
do that.
Game in the 50s.
There's no you got to win this game. Yeah. You got to win this game lower than that.
I know. I'm trying to help him out. Game 9, guys, Saturday. Elida at LCC. It's three-man booth. Mark Miller, Jerry Snodgrass, and Mark Schein. Elida comes in 8-5, LCC 6-6. And don't forget, guys, LCC has their big game with Bluffton Friday night, and Elida and Bath are playing in a rivalry game Friday night. So how much energy are these two teams going to have in a Saturday night showcase, which is always a great game?
Yeah, great point by you. A huge rivalry, but how about the legends getting together with Mark Miller and Jerry Snodgrass and Mark Schein? How much Ensure is going to be drinking that booth during that broadcast?
There'll be a cheer. There'll be a toast, yeah.
This is a interesting matchup. I think LCC benefits greatly from this being at home, especially on the back-to-back night. They play at home on Friday night as well.
Yeah, Matthew Quatman even brought that up. He goes, it's good to be back at home.
Yeah, so I do think that is going to be greatly beneficial for them. But right now, this is two teams going in opposite directions. Yeah. You got an Elida team that is looking really good. As we mentioned earlier, 7-1 in their last 8 games. They're playing really good basketball. They seem to have gotten some things figured out as far as their guard play goes, working on the inside as well. For LCC, it kind of seems to be going the other way. They've been struggling here as of lately. It's been a tough go. The schedule hasn't been overly kind to them. They're going to have a very difficult game against Bluffton. Depending on how that game goes, even if you win it, that's going to be a lot of energy spent to win this game.
Sure
so is. How are you going to be able to get back up the very next night? If you lose that game, you're just adding to the skid. That starts to be mentally draining, especially for a very young team. And because of how this matchup went the first time around in a tip-off classic, this just feels like a game that will mean more to Elida.
Danny, would you rather have veteran guards or young guards?
I'd rather have veteran.
Right. So it tends to make you believe Elida has got the benefit here, right? I go back to talking to Jordan Prudy after this first matchup, and I asked him, I said, what was it like having to deal with Amari Wash guarding you? And he says, man, that guy's strong. So that makes me think, oh, boy, he's going to have that in his mind already. I like Elida's matchup here.
No. Game 10 Saturday night, it's Putnam County League action. Kaleida goes to Columbus Grove. Scott Magg and Josiah Stober. Kaleida comes in 7-7. Columbus Grove 4-4. Columbus Grove still trying to find their way from a long football season. And then you look over at the Kaleida Wildcats. They got a big win over LCC. I know we've talked about LCC's struggle, but it's still a good win for Kaleida. This is always a good matchup in the PCL.
Well, even Columbus Grove got a big win over LCC last week.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
15-8 in the fourth to beat LCC. I like Columbus Grove because they have a lot of guys that can chime in and score. I mean, once in a while you look and you go, Trent Braza had 25. Well, they won last week when he only had 5 points. And then Trevin Baxter had 17 last weekend. To a Kaleida team, it's a nice team, but I just don't know if they can score enough. You got Bubba Smith and And who else, really? Jackson Schrader can score a little bit. I mean, they struggle to score points.
I mean, I think that this game was 3 weeks ago. I would like Kalaitis' chances a lot more.
Yeah, great point.
But I think with Columbus Grove, as you mentioned, Danny, getting back from that football stretch and everybody, you know, kind of getting back in and rounding into basketball shape, you know, they're only going to continue to get better. I think that they're playing better basketball right now. I think the defense is really good and only getting better. And I agree with you, Miles. I think that Kalaitis is going to struggle to score against this Bulldog team, and that obviously is not going to bode well for the Wildcats.
Well, and you know, Columbus Grove loves to apply pressure, right? And so if you got one of your big scorers in Bubba Smith wasting energy trying to get the ball across the floor, you know, what's he have left once you get it in the half court? No. Yeah.
Guys, game 11 Saturday, Shawnee at Kenton, Nate Garlock, Caleb Gieskin on the call. Shawnee at 11-2, Kenton at 1-9. Why is this a Saturday night game, guys?
WBL action.
That's
a good question.
I don't know that. I don't have the answer for that.
Well, doesn't Shawnee play Defiance on Friday to
That's why I'm asking.
Is this a reschedule?
But it doesn't make sense that it's a rescheduled game because neither of these teams went into the playoffs for football.
Yeah, well, no.
Defiance did.
Yeah, but we're talking about why is this a Saturday night?
Oh, right.
Yeah, it is a little confusing as to why Shawnee and Kenton are playing on Saturday night when we know typically Friday nights are your conference games. Especially when Shawnee already has a conference game on Friday night and a big conference game on Friday night against Defiance.
Well, remember though, there was a WBL game on Monday, OG and Defiance.
Earlier in the year. So WBL just kind of doing whatever they want.
Yeah, irregardless. I'm taking Shawnee in this one.
1-9 Kenton, man. This is a tough ask.
The only thing that you can say at this point when you're looking through it, and, you know, obviously, I have this call. It'll be interesting to see how things go Friday night. Yeah. You know, this is a Defiance team that has really creeped up on people.
And really good defense.
Only one loss.
Coming into this season, nobody thought that this was a Defiance team that was going to make a lot of noise. It just wasn't on the radar. They're undefeated in WBL play. They only have one loss. Now, the schedule hasn't been incredibly difficult, but sometimes that can benefit you, especially when, you know, you're trying to work through some things and you're kind of building yourself back up. Great. The schedule played out in our favor. We got to work through some stuff. And now as we hit the tougher part, we know how to win. We know how to grind. You know, we expect ourselves to win. And sometimes that's all a team needs. So that's going to be a tough game for Shawnee against Defiance on Friday night. Now, depending on how that goes, you could look at Shawnee coming into this Kenton game.
Yeah.
Maybe this is that trap game. They get off to a slow start. You know,
Hangover.
Kenton grinds this out, slows things down. You know,
Kenton's got good guards. Kenton can shoot the ball. Yeah.
It's not the craziest scenario that you've ever heard, but I do think that when you look at this one, this should be a runaway victory for Shawnee. But you know, there's been a couple of games where we thought that about the Indians, and they've been a lot closer than they should have been.
They had that great, huge, giant lead against DSJ, and DSJ came back. I do have to ask you this, Nate. When last time I saw Shawnee play, Jagger Hutchins was a little bit struggling on the offensive end. I saw that he had 25 last weekend in a game. Do you think it's been a conscious effort to get him going again?
You know, it's hard to tell because I think that is what makes the Shawnee team dangerous, is that you have a player like Jagger Hutchins that can score. He has that ability. He can be an offensive threat. He can catch fire and you can let the offense flow through him. And if he's on it that night, he can score 20-20. We've seen this out of him his entire high school career when he was over at Lima Senior. So he has that ability. But I think for Shawnee, what it is trying to get this consistent scoring out of him, right? And trying to find where the rotation is going to be and, you know, finding who's going to have the ball and when and who's going to take the shots. Jagger is a very good player. They're not taking anything away from Jagger at all. It's just when you got three guys who all can score and who all want the ball in their hands, it's not always easy. A lot of people are like, oh, you got all this talent. That's an easy thing for coach. Of course, Coach Triplett should be winning. It is way more difficult than people think when it comes to trying to be able to manage all of that talent. And so I still think that at times we see, you know, them struggle with that at times, but I think it's a great sign for Shawnee when, you know, Jagger is able to have games like that and they can show, hey, listen, we got other guys besides just somebody with the last name Berkey that can score.
All right, guys, we're in and out of gyms every weekend. We go see the best high school basketball in all the state of Ohio. What about the student sections? Who's got the best student section you've seen so far?
You know, for me, and it's a bit of a homer call because I spend most of my time in this gym, but the the home court Shawnee student section is phenomenal.
It's pretty good.
They are two rows off of the front of the stands, and it goes all the way up to the top of the ceiling. And they are all dressed. They have their themes. They send it out. It is a student-led theme. It doesn't come from the school or anything. These guys send it out. Everybody dresses up. Everybody gets into it. It is a great student section.
Yeah, it's a really good one. OG, you know, even though they're 3-8, they're still showing up.
Definitely.
They're still fantastic, absolutely. Right? And they have the Mr. and Mrs. Titan dressed up in the Titan gear with no shoes on.
Team out, yeah.
They had a jersey out last week, and we had some 1980s jerseys from the back in the day that Mom and Dad used to wear. And Steph Schulte on the back one, number 20. That was pretty cool. I mean, there might have been mothballs in it, but it was a pretty cool jersey. And then at Delphi St. John's, they had a country club night when I was there, and that was fantastic. I thought both those student sections, and plus they have that like the little kids student section too. Which is fantastic.
I want Yacht Rock night. That's what I want.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
For me, guys, this is kind of an left field pick, but I had Kenton a couple weeks ago, and their student section, they believe it or not, they let them stand on the baseline. They let them stand underneath the rim, and I mean, it is you. They are on top of you when you are running half court sets down there. And I talked to Brett Purcell. I'm like, "Are you allowed to do that?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, everything's good." But I'm telling you, it's really intimidating. And Kenton's 109, but they'll put a ton of kids out there, and they're cheering for their Wildcats.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. All right, guys, who are your top three teams in Lima Land, and who's your Stolly Superstar of the Week?
My top three, DSJ. Unless they find Rushi in the state tournament, and Danny, who's already said that he thinks Rushi's
going to play in the sectionals.
No, I love DSJ, man. I just love their effort. Senior, because they're so athletic and so talented. The Lima senior is fantastic. And then Shawnee. I know Shawnee's got a couple losses, but they got three scores. And, you know, when they get Hutchins going and the Berkeys, and Ojo too, man. I love that kid.
Love him.
And Tate Bender is tough as nails. I just really like that Shawnee team.
For me right now, I think the three best teams, there's a lot, so this isn't the easiest one to do.
No, do not add us.
Yes. I agree with you, Delphi St. John's. I think that's a no-brainer pick right now. The way that they're playing, it's phenomenal. I went with Crestview. I think that they're playing really good basketball right now. They picked up some really big wins over this last weekend.
Play.
Yeah, they're playing fantastic basketball. I like what they're doing right now. And Marion Local. What Marion Local's doing, how they started this season, all the games they're playing in such a short amount of time and being able to win. Surprise, surprise, that a Marion Local team made a best of or top teams in the area list.
Danny, you got to have Spencerville to save us, right?
I do.
Because all three of us don't have Spencerville.
Well, that's why I kind of went with now, in the moment, just as last week.
Spencerville's really. We have a loss here.
He knows me as well as anybody. Yeah. I got Delphi St. John's, obviously reasons. I've got Spencerville, and I've got Lima Senior. I think, and you, what is the common theme with all three of those teams?
Guard play.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
Exceptional guard play. Exceptional guard play. Could you imagine Cam Elwer on any of those teams? Could you imagine the Sensiballs on any of those teams? Could you imagine Sean Foster going to one of those other schools? It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that brings me to my Stolly Superstar of the Week. It's Cam Elwer, 32 in the rivalry game. He's just a bucket getter. I don't know that we've seen a guard like him in a long time. And Sean Foster can say, "Wait a minute, look over here." And Sensiball, Will Sensiball, hey, over here.
Me?
I mean, we're living in the golden age, boys. I'm telling you.
Yeah, this is a great year for guard play in Lima Land. I'm going with Amari Wash because
he's a dandy.
What he did in the second half against OG was Zuri Island in foul trouble. It was outstanding. Led the basketball team. Doesn't need a ton of shots to score either. I mean, he's very efficient with his offense, but defensively, he just ties you up, man. He's so good.
Yeah, I went with Ren Sheets. Ren Sheets had a fantastic weekend. He put up 27 points in that win against Bluffton, a huge conference win for Crestview. And then the very next night, they went and played an undefeated Arlington team. He put up 26 points in that victory to give Arlington their first loss of the season. He's playing great basketball right now.
He's guarded by a 6'10 kid. Yeah. I mean, he was shooting over. All right.
right, guys, let's talk about it. Ohio State versus Notre Dame. We've got the national championship game all together. The first thing we want to know, if Nate still hates Will Howard. Will the Savior Howard has taken this program.
When he threw that interception, I'm like, oh, there's Nate. He's smiling right now.
I expected to get the text.
I did
Nate.
Too, yeah.
Well, I was trying. I didn't know where you guys were as far as calling games. I was trying not to ruin stuff for you guys.
Second half. How late do you think our game was?
You should say that, Nate. I got home, and I had DVR'd it, and the game was about to halftime, and my son called me. He said, where are you at, Dad? And I go, I haven't started the game yet. Do not talk to me about this. So he hangs up. I'm getting texts from all my buddies, and I'm not even looking. So I'm fast-forwarding, going through, you know, but I finally caught up.
Yeah. So anyway, back to Will.
You know what happens with Jack Sawyer?
Yes.
So back to my best friend Will Howard. Listen, I've never hated Will Howard. All right, so I don't.
We got it on audio.
I don't hate Will Howard.
You're on the show.
I don't hate Will Howard. I'm very indifferent with Will Howard. All right. It's not hate. It's indifference.
I don't know what he has to do to get in your favor.
Listen. Here's the thing. I had this conversation with somebody today. Today, I don't know,
Mr. Howard.
About Will Howard and. Will Howard, he has to stop trying. He tries to do too much at times, right?
I don't disagree with that.
I don't need Will Howard to be an elite quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback, so he needs to stop trying to be an elite quarterback. When he has we saw it against Oregon, and we saw it against Tennessee as well. The O-line plays good. He has time. He doesn't feel pressure. He looks elite. He looks great. He makes great. As soon as things start to get a little tight, though, you can almost see him stiffen up. And all of a sudden, he's trying to do too much. He tries to be too perfect. And that's when he starts making mistakes.
Tries to run too fast and trips over the 15.
And that's a great example, though. It's almost like he's in it. He's like, oh, I have to score now. He's thinking too much. And then next, he's tripping over his own feet. Like, he just needs to relax. He needs to be Trent Dilfer. Be a game manager. Be a game manager. Win a national championship. But this whole did you see the old Notre Dame backup? I was like, yeah, absolutely, kid. I love this kid. He gets it. I don't know why everybody else is bashing me. Me and Malik get it.
Yeah.
So that's where my stance is on Will Howard. I don't hate Will Howard. I don't think that Will Howard's a bad quarterback. I've said that multiple times to you guys, and every time, I don't think he's a bad quarterback. I don't. I don't think he's a great quarterback, and I don't need him to be a great quarterback. I just need him to stay within himself and do what he does well, and then try not to be too perfect.
He's going to be a national championship.
Worst national championship quarterback in the history of college football.
Defenses Ohio State played this year: Penn State, Oregon, Tennessee.
Through interception.
He's 4-1 against all of them.
With 5 interceptions.
He's 4.
It's great. Good thing he has the world's greatest defense to back him up.
I just think it's great that Danny showed us what 5 looks like.
Hey, guys, look, Jack Sawyer, strip sack, touchdown, biggest play in Ohio State history. Look at Nate shaking his head. Look, here's my
list. Yeah, what do you think?
It was an amazing play.
It was an amazing play.
It was a good play.
As soon as he does that, I know we're winning and going to the national championship.
Oh, sure.
So it was an iconic moment.
Absolutely.
It didn't win us the national championship, but it put us there.
It didn't even win us that game.
There was two minutes left.
Yeah. We were already up, fellas.
By 7.
Okay, great.
It was fourth down.
It wasn't.
They were on the goal line.
They weren't. They were on like the 10 or the 11.
8-yard line.
Okay.
Big deal.
We were up a touchdown. It was fourth down. He throws the ball. It could be intercepted, batted down. It could be a turnover on down. It doesn't win the game because it was a great Mason blue underneath that pullover.
It
was a great play. It was iconic. We'll always remember it. But trying to say it was the greatest play.
Wait a minute. What did he say? He said we'll always remember it. Isn't that an iconic play? I just said it was iconic.
Okay. But trying to say it's the greatest play in Ohio State history.
I didn't say that.
You're trying to rewrite history. It didn't even win a national title. It won a semifinal matchup. It didn't even win it. It just solidified it.
Nate's the guy that is arguing because he wins the lottery at $5 million, but he's got to pay taxes on it. He's upset about that.
Well, that's true, though. I would be mad.
Yeah. Guys, here are some of mine. Okay,
all right, let's hear it.
Heart of the South. Ezekiel Elliott, 85 yards to the Alabama defense.
But it didn't win us the national title.
It didn't. I'm going to tell you what. Listen, if you don't pick the one that should be the greatest, I'm going to get real angry.
Ohio State history. So we're probably going to get angry.
Then my second one is Keith Byers, the shoe game.
I don't even know who
that
is.
Against Illinois.
The shoe comes off, and he goes 65 yards for the touchdown. That's
a great comeback in 85.
And that won a regular season game? Yeah, you're right. Great game.
It was an iconic game.
Awesome.
The 2003.
He said he didn't know who Keith Byers was.
Yeah, I know. The 2003 Fiesta Bowl. Maurice Clare.
All right, okay, we're good.
Stripping.
Yeah. That is that.
He strips the ball from Sean the
Taylor,
safety,
Sean Taylor. Yeah.
That is, to me, the greatest play in Buckeye history.
It's not.
That's mine.
That was mine.
That's mine.
It's mine. No, it's not. What?
That saved the game for Ohio State.
Without a doubt.
In national title. That changed that entire game and led to them winning eventually that national title.
The greatest play in Ohio State history kept us undefeated, and it's called Holy Buckeye.
Holy
Buckeye. That's a pretty good one, too. I just picked that one last time we were talking about it.
You cannot win the national championship unless Craig Krenzel hits Michael Jenkins down the field.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I'll give you that one only because Claret doesn't make his outstanding play
if that
play doesn't happen. I'll give it to you.
All right, go back and watch.
Likes me again.
Go back and watch Holy Buckeye because I guarantee this.
Don't.
I'm not. I'm just telling you what happened. Krenzel takes off. He's going to run for the first down.
And then he
realizes, like, I'm not going to get
it. He stepped up in the pocket.
And he throws up. Yeah. No, he didn't step up. He ran up in the pocket.
And then he's like, oh, I'll just throw it over.
All right, so what are some of you guys'?
You hit him. For me, the number one play in Buckeye history for me is Claret, the freshman running back.
That's incredible.
The season he'd had. It's the narrative going into that game. Everything that he was going through in the moment, all the spot, everything that had happened, the injuries he was going through. You know, he started off, everybody's like, oh, this is going to be a freshman Heisman winner, right? Yeah. And then he got hurt. He started to slow down. Then they started talking about maybe he was a bust. Then he had the stuff going on at home.
His life took a turn.
Yeah. Things went a little awry, but that strip, that, you know, we fumble, Miami gets it back. They're going back the other way. He hustles up, gets it back for Ohio State. Completely changed
Isn't
that game.
Funny how these plays have named. People have named them like Heart of the South, Holy Buckeye.
Yeah,
you know, it's
we're still debating on what Sawyer's is going to be called. But let me go back to that Miami Florida national title game against Ohio State. Let me remind you, in overtime, 4th and 12. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Remember this? Krenzel hits Michael Jenkins on a sideline play.
Yeah.
On a 4th and 12, or else we don't win that also.
And Jenkins is tiptoeing on the sideline.
Yes.
For an incredible catch.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So without that play also. So, you know, there's so many great plays in Ohio State history. And Jack Sawyer, I mean, he is going to be beloved by Buckeye fans forever.
We got to name it because if we're doing a show now, we can get it out to the media. We have to name it.
I don't know. Is it in the dictionary I gave you?
No, that is great. That was good. Are you still wanting to fire Ryan Day? I know Nate's not on the fire Ryan Day train. I'm not. But first of all, why'd you say I wasn't? I'm just trying to get somebody to be on my side.
So I took some paint and I repainted my fire the Ryan Day train.
Yeah.
It's now the fire the Mike Tomlin train. Look, Ryan Day, what he is doing as a head football coach after what took place at Michigan when he was a broken man. Remember we saw him after that game?
100%.
And he was just a broken dude.
Yeah.
And then to hear him in press conferences, especially after the Cotton Bowl win, that was a different guy. Yeah. That's a guy now that is commanding a team. That is a guy that is commanding press conferences. That is a man that is sure of himself. It is a night and day. You know, don't want to have a pun there, but it is. He is a much different football coach. When he wins that national title on Monday, which he's going to do, when he wins that national title, it's just going to elevate him more. And I said in July, and you probably remember this, I said they're going to win 3 national titles in the next 8 years.
You do say.
And this is going to catapult them because Ryan Day is now going to be a made man.
So I am cautiously optimistic about Ryan Day right now. I have always said, and you know, I was just saying this in the group chat we had when we were talking about Mike Tomlin and the Steelers.
Right? Yeah.
Change for the sake of change isn't always a good thing, right? If you're going to move on, even when people were really down on Ryan Day after that Michigan game and talking about, well, if he loses to Tennessee, what are we going to do? Firing somebody just to fire somebody isn't a great move. You have to have a plan to have somebody better step into that role, or it doesn't make sense to move on from somebody, right?
Right.
And I still feel that way. I have some reservation about this national title game. I think that Ohio State should win
Dark
this.
Cloud, Nate. Has
well, yeah, and yeah, let me explain. Well, let me explain why. Okay. Ohio State should win this game. They are the better team. Okay, I really do. I do think that there are some things that Notre Dame can do that can cause Ohio State some issues, but I think that Ohio State ultimately is the better team and should win this game. However, this is a big game. This is a spotlight game. This is a pressure game, right? What can you say about Tennessee and Oregon and Texas? They weren't national title games. Yeah, they were the Rose Bowl. Yeah, they were the Cotton Bowl.
That was a lot of pressure last Saturday, though.
That was a brutal schedule, though, to get through those games.
I'm not saying that you guys are wrong, but I'm saying now this is the game, right? We've had the game before this season. We've had it twice. Hmm. What happened when we had the game twice this year? We lost. Ryan Day couldn't get it done, right? Now the Oregon game, really close game, but that was a clock management issue. Some bad decisions by Ryan Day may have cost us that one, right? I put that game on Ryan Day more than I put it on Will Howard, and you guys know how easily I put things on Will Howard. But then Michigan, that was a broken man. I am a little worried that maybe we see Ryan Day get too cautious, too in the moment, too in his head, start overthinking the room because he knows he has to win this game.
I can't believe I'm gonna defend Ryan Day, of all people. However, all right, the Travion Henderson touchdown right before half, why that happened? Because Ryan Day, they're like, what do we want to do? And he goes, I want you to run the screen. And they're like, well, and he goes, no, run the screen. And so he asserted himself, and they ran the screen. So I'm not sure earlier in the year Ryan Day is assertive, especially dealing with his mentor, Chip Kelly, calling plays. But he was a much different guy than the guy that we saw earlier in the year.
But I just go back to what my concern is in these big games, right, he won't be assertive. Mm. It's because somehow in these big games he starts trying to outthink the room instead of going with his gut and going with what he does
not,
so well.
He did not look like John Cooper.
Just starts getting a little panicky. And then instead of, run the screen, going, all right, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe we won't run the screen here.
I go back to the Michigan game, and after I've watched it 2 and 3 times, every
Why would you
time,
do that to yourself?
Well, because
did you just hate yourself?
I'm a junkie. And I watched that game, and both times Jaden Fielding went on the field, that was the correct call. Just kick the field goal. If we make both those field goals, we don't even talk about Ryan Day.
Well, I know, but when things start going wrong.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
You're right. Fielding kicking those field goals was right, but now they didn't. So then it's, oh, no, now that panic sets in. Now that's when we start seeing him. So if things get off script and things don't go the way that they're supposed to go, are we going to get the Ryan Day that we got against Oregon and we got against Texas? Or are we going to get the Ryan Day that we got against Oregon the first time and Michigan? That's my biggest reservation. So, he wins this national title game, and we do this convincingly, and we look like the Ohio State team that we should look like, because there were times. I told you guys this.
We win by 20 or by 1.
Well, I told you guys this after the Oregon game. The Tennessee and the Oregon game, this looked like the Ohio State team that I was sold back in July and August.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Texas, there was times where we started to look.
We killed ourselves too many times.
Yes.
With a lot of penalties, too, against Texas. We were not very disciplined against Texas, and I think that was part of, in the moment, a high-pressure game, a good Texas team. You heard on the radio today, Spencer Holbrook talked about how physical Texas was.
They were.
And they were as physical as any team we played all year. So you look at Jeremiah Smith in that game, guys. He was held to one catch for 3 yards. Was that a good thing? And the reason I ask is I don't think it was a bad thing, because my goodness, Cornell Tate showed you why he would be the best receiver on any other team in the country. While the tight end stepped up the screen passes, and he took one weapon away. What did we do? We throw, go around.
Well, Texas, give them a lot of credit. Took a little bit of that Michigan formula, two high safeties all night long. You're going to have to throw in front of us, and we're going to come up and hit you.
Jeremiah Smith was open all the time. Will Howard just missed him.
he was forcing some passes.
But I think it's a good thing, because you had to involve other guys, right? Maybe the best pass-catching night ever for G. Scott at Ohio State.
Yeah.
Think about the big play where he dragged guys and got it to fourth and two instead of fourth and seven, and then Will Howard was able to get the first down.
But if they wouldn't have the penalty before, it wouldn't have been fourth and two. It would have been a first down.
Right. But, I mean, other guys were included, and I think J.J. Smith, Jeremiah Smith, is going to be fantastic because of what Notre Dame does.
They run man-to-man.
Nobody blitzes more than Notre Dame.
They never run zone. Everything's man on the outside. And I don't know. And how are you going to adjust in 10 days?
Yeah.
How are you going to sell your guys?
Yeah.
So I agree with both of you. I think that it was a good thing. I think the biggest takeaway then, if you're Ohio State, though, is like, oh, well, we can win without him. Okay. It's okay if Jeremiah Smith doesn't. We don't have to force it to him. We don't have to make sure that he is the focal point or that he catches the ball 10 times.
The open guy.
It's great. I have a ton of other weapons. We can look other ways. That's fine. And then what that does is that changes the defense up then too, because now with Notre Dame going in going, well, we can bracket him. We can try to take him away, but we can't leave other guys open because they're going to catch the ball too, and we're going to have just as many issues. So I do think that it was a good thing, and it should give that entire offense and Will Howard a lot of confidence going into this Notre Dame game.
I'm going to make my prediction first, guys.
All right.
I always hand it off to you guys, and I'm going to make
hear
it.
Danny.
I'm going to say the Buckeyes win this one 24-10. It'll be a lower scoring game because Notre Dame has an excellent defense. I think they're going to try to keep the ball away from us. I believe the offensive MVP is going to be that freshman, Jeremiah Smith. I think he's going to ball out. I think he's going to be an excellent choice for that. And the defensive MVP, I'm going to go Cody Simon because they're going to run the ball. They're going to try to come up the middle, and Cody Simon's going to get 12 to 15 stops, and we're all going to be going, man, that's a great career. Cody Simon, what a great year he's had. We don't talk a lot about him, but he's been fantastic.
He's tough as nails. Yep. I'm going to go a little bit different than you. Surprisingly, I'm going with Ohio State.
That's weird.
I know. But I don't. Most national title games, if you go through the history, they're not close affairs, right? They turn into blowouts. I would argue this, that if you're going to stack Ohio State's opponents, I think Tennessee even beats Notre Dame. I think Oregon beats Notre Dame, and I know for sure Texas beats Notre Dame. I think this is the worst of all the teams that Ohio State's going to play. Name one player at Notre Dame that terrifies you. Yes, right?
Malik Zaire.
Right. There's nobody, right? Notre Dame loves the blitz. We do a great job with pass protection.
What
right?
about Lou Holtz? What about the Leprechauns? What about the luck of the Irish?
Nothing there, right? Yeah. Everybody tells me Notre Dame runs the football really well. Okay, that's fine. Well, Jim Knowles is no dummy. If we go to our diamond front, which is Williams, McDonald, and Hamilton, and they're covering up the centers and the two guards,
so
how are you running the football there? All right. I am not concerned about this Notre Dame team at all. You go back and you look at Notre Dame's schedule. Seriously, go back and look at it, folks. Look at that schedule and tell me why this team was even worthy of the ranking that they got in the playoff. They play absolutely nobody. It's a joke. And everybody tells me how great this defense is. Who are these great offenses that they stopped? Indiana at home in the playoff, right? Georgia without a quarterback, right? Okay, James Franklin and Drew Aller, who throws backwards across the field.
He ain't lying.
I mean, so I think this one's going to be one that's going to be a lot of fun. I see 42-10 or 42-14. Players of the game, okay? Travion Henderson, he's going to be a monster. You and I were there last year, right? Mm-hmm. Travion gets dinged up. Do you remember this?
He had a great run down the sideline.
He did, but he gets dinged up, and he tells you he missed two games after that Notre Dame game. He said he was cheap-shotted by a Notre Dame linebacker who jumped on him and drove his helmet into his rib cage during that game.
Yeah.
Now, Travion Henderson, he's going to remember that.
Yeah.
And he's going to be really driven. He's going to have two explosive runs in the first half. He's going to be our offensive MVP. Cody Simon is going to be the defensive MVP because he's going to stop that Notre Dame run game. Folks, I'm telling you now, call your Dick's Sporting Goods. Call wherever you need to go. Find out how you're going to get your Ohio State National Championship hoodie on Tuesday morning and get it ready to go because we're all going to be wearing those hoodies on Tuesday.
You should have went to South Bend with us last year.
Why didn't you go to the Tennessee game,
to the
with,
game
us?
With us?
Yeah, you should have.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad you, because I was about to bring it. I was like, wow, it sounds like you guys make a lot of really cool trips to a lot of fun games around the area.
By the way,
sounds like a really good time.
You went to the Bahamas.
Looked into going to the Natty. Couldn't find a ticket under $1,600.
I told my wife I offered the $1,600.
Yeah. All right.
All right. So you two are ridiculous. You sat here a week ago and said that between Notre Dame and Penn State, you were more concerned about Notre Dame, and now you just said it's the worst, it's the weakest opponent they could possibly play.
He did.
A bunch of flip floppers over here. I was the only one that said that it was Penn State that I'd be worried about.
I realize that's not Jim Trussell, that's Marcus Freeman.
Yeah.
So I think that this Notre Dame defense is better than the Texas defense.
Oh,
I do.
I think.
That, I think that.
Aren't you Catholic?
I think that Riley Leonard is going to give the defense a different set of issues because I think that he can run the football.
Duke transfer Riley Leonard.
Well, you get real excited about a Kansas State transfer. Do we really want to go there? We really want to do this right now on air where it's recorded, or are we just going to move on?
Next, the one to get us fighting.
All right. And then, he looks to run the ball. You know, we like to blitz. There are going to be spaces. He's not going to stand still like Quinn did where he can just be hit and hit and hit. He will move around and he will jump out and he will extend plays. That can be a concern.
And he's going to get hit.
And that's going to be a concern of mine going into this game. I do think that they have a good running game.
I think that
there are things that this Notre Dame team can take advantage of that could cause Ohio State issues. I really, really do. And listen, I don't know that this is this runaway that you two. No, I'm just kidding. It's going to be like 55 to 4. I can't even keep it up.
Who's Riley Leonard throwing to?
Riley Leonard. I'm like, what?
I can't even keep it up. So listen, I think Ohio State is going to win this one. I think the momentum goes as long as Ryan Day doesn't get in his own way. Yeah. I really do think that this is going to
be a game.
I do think that this is going to be something that Ohio State should be able to come in. It should be a culmination of a really rough season. Now, I want to get to my picks real quick, and then I got a question for both of you guys.
Yeah.
Offensive MVP, I think it's going to be Will Howard. I think we're going to throw the ball around. I think that we're going to put up a lot of numbers. I think we're going to cause a lot of issues. And I think ultimately when that's said and done, I think that means that Will Howard will end up walking away with the offensive MVP with that, and they tend to give it to the quarterback. Let's just be honest,
they like
right?
That. They do.
On the defensive side, I think you're going to like this. Defensive MVP, all right? So my brother Will, he just graduated from Defiance, right? He works up at Defiance College. He was student body president, so he gave the speech at graduation.
Pretty cool.
All right? During that speech, he talked about he's a big wrestling fan, loves Cody Rhodes, okay?
Okay.
In his speech, he referenced that. He talked about, wrestling is a thing of his, and he gets a lot of lessons from it. And one of the lessons that he got was from Cody Rhodes, right? Finishing my story. And he talked about how Defiance let him finish his story, okay? I think the defensive MVP is going to be Jack Sawyer.
Nice.
Because I think he's going to finish his story at Ohio State. I think that how he came in recruited, how his career has gone, how he came back this year, how the season has gone. I think his story began at the end of that Michigan game and how he handled that flag planting situation and all of those things. And then how he has played every game in this playoffs. Culminating with the strip sack, going back for a touchdown to seal that game last week against Texas. I think that he comes out and he wreaks havoc on Notre Dame. I don't think they have an answer for him. I think he will be an absolute monster coming off of that edge. And I think he finishes his story at Ohio State with a national title and being defensive MVP of the national title game. I really do. And if that happens, I want to go into the archives of 93.1 The Fan. And when we did our Ohio State preview and you guys asked me who the most important player on the defensive side would be this year for Ohio State, I said Jack Sawyer, mainly because I thought all the attention would go to the other side of JT and he was going to have to step up in order to, let some other guys open up. But the way that he has played these last four, now five games, I think is going to seal forever his stature at Ohio State.
He'll never buy another meal in Columbus.
Did he just reference the play that he said wasn't really that big of a play?
I didn't say it wasn't a big play. I said that it wasn't the greatest play in Ohio State history because you clowns were trying to rewrite history.
And he picked a 4-year starter, a 5-star, to be the player of the game. Woo-hoo! Way to go out on a limb there, later. Good job.
You. All right, so here's my question. So here's my question that I want to ask you guys real quick before we get out of here. Okay. So we all think this is going to culminate in an Ohio State win. We're all going to win a national title.
Yeah, I'll cry. Is that your question?
No.
Oh, okay.
Is this national title going to have less meaning for you guys because didn't beat Michigan and we didn't win a Big Ten title.
No. The ultimate goal for this team was to win the national championship.
No, it wasn't. It was to beat Michigan. No, what are you talking about? They came back to win gold pants.
They did, but they didn't. And you got to change direction sometimes. And they will forever go down. Hey, the last time Alabama won a national championship, do you know who beat them? Auburn.
Listen,
Auburn beat them the last time they won the national championship. Nobody cares.
I think people do is the problem.
People north of Toledo do, but nobody here does.
So it's going to be like the NFL moving forward, right? Because, you know, let's say the Steelers, they win a Super Bowl, and the Browns beat them one time that year, right? Nobody runs around and says, well, they won the Super Bowl, but they lost to the rival, the Browns. But I think it's going to be like that.
I think that's going to take about 10 to 15 years to get out of people's system. Right now, this rivalry still matters. There will be people who are like, I'm going to be thrilled when we win a national championship.
Absolutely.
I really am. But we all are going to talk about it. Does it mean a little less? And unfortunately, and I think for these guys, there's always going to be that national champion, Ohio State Buckeyes, 2024. But they didn't beat Michigan. They didn't win a Big Ten title because this new format has allowed that to be okay. Where before you couldn't win a national title,
how many Ohio State
if
teams
you didn't beat Michigan.
Would have won national titles, but they didn't get an opportunity.
Exactly.
They lost to Michigan. Nate, when they come back to the horseshoe and they say, you know, back for a 10-year, 20-year, the 2024 national champion Ohio State Buckeyes, they're not going to say, oh, by the way, they lost to Michigan.
There will be people that say that. Well, 100% there will be.
It won't be over the PA.
Well, look, it's not going to be on the banner they hang up, that's for sure.
I work in education. You work in education. He's got the day off. Why won't WSN and Nick send us to the national championship game to do the three wise men from outside
of
Mercedes-Benz Stadium?
Yeah,
a live
absolutely.
Broadcast. I'm all up for it. You're up for it. Miles
we'll,
up for
we'll
it.
Get Will Howard
it.
On. Yes. I can tell him how bad he is to his
Nick
face.
Nick can get us
It'll
media.
It'll be great TV.
Nick can get us media credentials.
There's
Let's
nobody better in broadcasting than Nick Fraley. So I'm sure he'll get
this
done.
He's the best.
Absolutely.
He's my and he's a good-looking guy. I'm telling you. You have been listening to the Three Wise Men. We'll see y'all next week.